This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Yeah, like, I've been saying for years that people love shit. you know, they just love the worst possible fucking garbage shit. So, I thought, how can I exploit that?
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic-playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for mises they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play it easy. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mind Flayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the A-Team Talk Show. As always, this is your host, KYT. And boy, do we have a motherfucking good guest for you tonight. We've got Jay motherfucking Boosh tonight. Let's hear it for Jay. Star of the hit TV show Celebrity Crap Chat. We've got Jay in the house tonight. I'm very excited. I haven't heard from him for a long time, so I'm excited to see him on the show. But before that, before we get him on the show, I'm going to talk about what's been going on with me these past couple of days. We just had our MDSS in Quebec City. Pretty sweet. We got a record-breaking attendance in Quebec City. Usually, we don't get too many people. It's one of the weaker cities where we're lucky to break 40 or 50 players. But because it was Modern, 119 players showed up. We more than doubled our attendance, which was a shock to me as someone representing Mana Deprived and someone that is representing Face-to-Face Games. Now, it was just exciting this weekend to see this many players come up. We don't know whether it's a function of the month the tournament was taking place in, the function of the fact that there's a lot of Modern players in Quebec City, which is confusing that Modern actually as a whole has been attracting more people. Because I think it attracts both sides of the spectrum. You've got like the casuals on the one hand that keep their Modern deck, that one precious Modern deck, and they'll come out to play, and they'll attract also the competitive players because it's a relevant competitive format as opposed to Legacy, where there's only one Legacy GP per year. So that's interesting. I'm going to be talking about Jay about if he knows anything about the Modern scene in his area. But today, something really weird happened. For the first time, a lot of people started messaging me. This is a true story. On Facebook about this guy, Sam Hawkins, that have tried to add them on Facebook. And this is a guy that has added me. And then I accepted because part of my job as like a social media guy or community guy is, you know, I don't really try to judge the people that I'm adding because I just want to add as much as people as possible, like get the word out about Mana Deprived and Face-to-Face Game, so I don't really worry about like who the fuck the guy really is. But this guy, after I accepted his request, he decided to, I guess, spam add everyone. And because I guess I'm known as a trustworthy person in the community, people see that they're like, okay, this friend's trying to add me, and he knows KYT, therefore I should probably consider adding this guy. So this is I thought this type of situation would happen way more, but today over five 5 to 10 people message me. It's like, who is this guy? Who is this Sam Hawkins guy? I even got text messages from my friend John asking me. And to kill it off, I laughed out loud at work because my own sister in Toronto, which she has never done, sent me a G-chat message asking me who the Sam Hawkins guy is and if she should add him. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy? I look him up. I mean, I see all his friends are Magic players that I know. And he apparently lives in Greenfield Park, Quebec. So I don't know what his deal is, if he's just like a fake spam bot account that people are creating to try to harness information, or this is just a creepy kid stalker that's trying to hang on to follow every Magic player, but also everyone that they know. So it kind of creeps me out. Anyways, we've got Jay here coming out, so waiting for us. So let's not have him wait any longer. Come on down, Jay.
Woo! Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Jay.
What's happening?
Very, very nice to see you. Haven't seen you in a long time, my friend.
Been a while. I've been busy. You know, celebrity crap chat is taking off, so you know, I'm not around as much as I'm not as available, I guess, as I used to be.
Well, I'm surprised that it's been a hit show. Like, we used to joke about this being a thing, but then like it's somehow actually caught on. There's like, we thought it would hit a particular market, but it's just, like, been a runaway fucking hit.
Yeah, like, I've been saying for years that people love shit. you know, they just love the worst possible fucking garbage shit. So, I thought, how can I exploit that? And, you know, I found a way, I guess. People love it.
So, I was just talking about this creepy Facebook thing that happened to me today. I know you've quit Facebook for a while now,
I don't need any stalkers.
For important stuff, so, like, I guess this stuff never fucking happens to you, right?
You know, I mean, to be fair, like, if I ever do go on Facebook, there's, like, 5,000 friend requests from people that I don't know and have never heard of. And so it happens, you know, I mean, it doesn't really happen to me because, like, I just ignore them. I ignore every... Like, I mean, it's not against anyone. I just, like, don't... I just don't go on Facebook enough that it's, like... I feel like it's a disservice if I friend you on Facebook. It's, like, that's actually worse than if I...
Right.
If you're my friend on Facebook, then, like, I'm just setting you up to be let down because you're, like, oh, shit, you know, Boosh is gonna have all these fucking celebrity crap chat updates and, like, about the show and all this stuff, and it's, like, nope, he's just never gonna talk to me. Great.
Hey, yeah, we don't want you to, like, we know about the show already. We don't need you to, like, not everyone's going to be able to view those videos. So we, obviously we have you on because you always are very vocal about your opinions when it comes to new Magic releases, about how, usually it's about how lame they are and how they're just, like, repeating certain mechanics.
Sure, yeah.
This past weekend, people have been losing their fucking minds, like they do every fall release, because Magic, people at WotC have been trying constantly to come up with something that just gets you beyond excited, and it basically costs them nothing to do certain of these things, whether it be Zendikar Treasures or whatever, and this time, it's foil, full art, fetch lands, or dual lands we're talking about, and people are just losing their shit. I'm pretty happy. I'm indifferent. I know a lot of people are pissed off because I don't really know why. I just feel like it's something that WotC can do to hype the set and get people who don't know what to do with their money to just spend a shit ton of money on the game. So what are your quick thoughts, Jay?
So the first thing is, like, I'm confused because I haven't really seen the information or whatever, but
okay.
Like, so is it every fetch and every what is it? It's fetch, shock, and then, like, the new duels? Is it every single one of those, or, like, what is it? Does anybody know?
Yeah, it's confirmed.
I'm on Dan Barrett's article. Shout out to Dan Barrett. He was on the show once. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So shout out to him, like, fucking writing articles for the mothership and stuff. Like, fuck, that's crazy. I was taken aback when I saw that. It says there are 25 different lands. So I'm assuming it's 10 fetches, 10 shocks, and then 5. So we can say that on the show. That's not confirming any information. Like, that's not saying the wrong thing.
Like, it's everything, right?
I'm not sure. Like, it literally says there are 25 different lands that can be found in PAX. That's all it says, though. And then in that article, it shows Arid Mesa and Steam Vent. And then I'm assuming the other ones were from, like, PAX. They were spoiled from PAX or something. Like PAX, not PAX.
Okay, so assuming it's all of them, what are your thoughts on this crazy printing?
So I think it's pretty cool that it's all of them. I like that they did the cycle instead of just, like, a couple here and there, because that means that, like, you know, people can get their sets, or Cube can, you know, have full sets. Dan Barrett, old alumni of an old show that we used to do called the A-Team, which was really the J-Team, he wrote an article on the Mothership that says there's 25 different lands that you can open. So I'm assuming from the spoilers, it's all the fetches, all the shocks, and then the 5 new duels or whatever they are. So I think it's cool. Now, here's the thing. I don't really care about this at all in terms of hype, because like, it's so rare that you'll open them. And in fact, it'll probably just cause like feel bads and jealousy with me if someone opens them in my presence. Like, I won't do anything mean to that person or anything. I'll just, like, it just, that's just, like, something that, like, sets you up to feel really terrible, right? It's kind of like, you know, it's the same kind of idea that I have about the battle packs that they do for pre-releases, where it's just like, oh, you sit down and the guy plays his first land or whatever, so now you know what rare he has, and it's just like, yeah, that's an unbeatable bomb. Like, I guess I just have to hold my removal for his one fucking bomb I know he has that I can't beat, and then I die to other stuff. So that's kind of what it's going to feel like. It's like, oh yeah, I opened shit, and this kid opened, like, foil Planeswalker, foil Fetchland, and, like, you know, and, like, what are these worth? Like, thousands of dollars, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know yet. I mean, a normal foil, let's say, the Scalding Tar or whatever is worth, like, at least 200 from what I know, and we're talking about a special one.
Like, I don't know, I'm not familiar enough with Magic to know, but, like, how many of these are perceivably going to be open?
Yeah, I have no fucking idea.
And then, like, so that's the thing. So I think they, like, I would really like to have them for my cube. That'd be really cool, just as a unique thing to have, kind of like the black-on-black Planeswalkers and stuff. But, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm not going to spend fucking billions of dollars on these things to have them in my cube. Like, I'll just proc them. The other thing I'll say is that, like, personally, I don't like the way they look. And
fans.
I also don't like that they called them full art lands. They're not fucking full art lands. If anything, they're extended art lands, because there's just a fucking text box on them still, which is fucking garbage. So you have a set that you've released full art lands. Why would you not release full art premium special super duper lands? Like, that's fucking garbage. So then there's like, oh, well, you know, it does say that they are, you know, draft legal if you do happen to open them, which is kind of like, that's kind of cool, kind of cheating. Like, some guy opens a Steam Vent in fucking Battle for Zendikar and just gets a dual land in his colors. Like, that's pretty cheating, but whatever. Like, but it's like, yeah, so you have to have, like, the text on there for new players, which is technically fine, I guess. But, like, this is not for new players, and this is not for playing in draft. This is basically like a From the Vault. This is like a collector's edition. Like, this is for the collectors. This is for the people that, like, want to spend the holler, get dollar money. Like, this is the fucking Straight out of Compton 6-4. This is, you know? So you don't need to fucking wreck that with a fucking text box, because a 6-year-old might not know what fucking Steam Vent does. Like, he can figure it out. We can tell him. It's not like this is a card that has 80 lines of text and Annihilator 5 and is from Collector's Edition in, you know, 1998. And, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't the Abyss. This is, right. This is tap this, sacrifice it, search your library for a mountain or a plane. Like, how fucking difficult is that? Like, I have, Superstar Proxy Guy, Josh, has made me, for a wedding gift, he made me all the shocks, all the duels, and all the fetches in full art text lists, right? So I'm a little biased because I have those, and they're foil, and they're fucking insane. Everyone that's ever seen them has just fucking come all over them. And I have them signed, too. I've gotten them signed by a lot of the artists that did them. And they look fucking immaculate, and not a single person has ever asked what Arid Mesa does. They know what Arid Mesa does. And if they, and then if anyone ever does ask, I'm just like, it's a fetch land. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, you know what I mean? So
yeah, that's a fair point.
That's my big issue with them. You know, if you're going to put out something that's a super collector's edition, like, why would you ruin it with this? Like, you spent all the money. Like, and if you look at the Magic card, it's not even really that different. All they did is they moved the type line from the middle of the card to the bottom. That's all they did in the whole card.
Right, right.
So, like, ooh, how fucking new and hip and visionary. Like, oh, man. Imagine if you were looking at, like, Omnath, Locust of Rage, and his art was a little extended, and it said Legendary Creature Elemental at the bottom on the same line as 5-5. Whoa! You're blowing my mind! Like, no, come on, you know? To be fair, I do, though, hate that everybody is complaining about this on Twitter, and so everybody blew up about, like, how they didn't like it, and I actually, like, hated their fucking garbage so much that I, like, don't even really remember what their issues were. Like, how they were, like, somebody brought up, like, this is not gonna help modern availability, and, like, this is not gonna fix the price of, like, $100 fetches, and it's, like, no. Well, that's not what this is for. Like,
yeah, and even Modern Masters didn't fix it. It made it worse because it made the format more popular.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, like that, I think it's okay for people to be a little bit upset about that. And only because, like Wizards said, even though you can't trust anything Wizards says because those fuckers are a bullshit, faceless company. But they said, like, oh yeah, we're going to release Modern Masters to kind of not flood the market, but to put more card copies in the market so that, like, you know, cards like Bob and Tarmogoyf will eventually go down. Because, you know, it's a little bit ridiculous that a playset of Goyfs is $500 or whatever it is, $1,000. And then, you know, no prices went down, and Modern is bullshit. So I can see being mad about that. But, like, to assume that the foil Arid Mesa Collector's Edition from the Battle for Zendikar pack is not going to, help demand in Modern, and to be upset about that makes you just a fucking idiot. Because they didn't say that it was for that. And obviously, when you release a special edition product, it's not to increase, the market value. I mean, it's not to decrease the market value and to flood the market with copies of it. Like, if Ferrari came out with a fucking special edition Enzo, and they were only going to make 8 of them ever, like, so it didn't even matter if 100 million people could afford them, they were only going to make 8 of them, you can't complain that, you know, that's not helping the Chrysler drivers of the world own a Ferrari. Like, they never claimed it was. So just shut the fuck up. You fucking idiot. Like, you know? I just hate that shit. I just can't stand it when people
say it's going to be interesting because on Tuesdays and Fridays at Face to Face Games, there's going to be drafts. And there's probably, as long as there's a good number of pods that night, there's going to be at least, like, one person that's going to be opening one of these, and a lot of jealous people every night. So, every Friday night, every Tuesday night. So, I'm excited to see that, and, well, I'm not excited to be jealous, because I'll probably be around when that happens, but I'm excited to see the foil in person and the happiness of whoever opens it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, absolutely. You know, and I mean, I would encourage people to you know, it's fine. Like, jealousy happens. Stuff like that happens. You can't really control it. It's fine. But, you know, when someone opens it, I would encourage them not to make them feel like shit. It's not, you know, they didn't, by them getting one, it didn't take anything away from you, is something that you kind of have to think about it that way. Like, it does suck that someone opened, say, $500 next to you, like a foil Goyf. You know, that sucks that you didn't open it. But that's independent of them opening.
Right.
You not opening something does not mean that somebody else did open it, and vice versa. So, you know, especially with little kids and stuff, I just want to make sure, like, people go forward. Just do the right thing. If a little kid opens one and he genuinely doesn't want it, like, I wouldn't try to convince the kid to keep it. Like, you know, when I first started playing Magic, I used to tell stories about this all the time, where, like, I would trade away all of my lands, especially my fucking fetch lands, because I started around Zendikar, because, like, who needs lands that cost $20? That's fucking stupid. I'll just buy more of these bad mythics with that money. But at the same time, like, you should be getting a fair deal, you know? So if a kid doesn't want it and he's going to trade it away, like, make sure that that kid isn't trading them for, like, fucking crawworms or some shit.
Right.
Please do the right thing, you know?
On the same page of lands, some new lands are coming. I don't know if you've seen them, Jay. New dual lands in Zendikar. They're the reverse Seacrum Coast is the only way I can think of them.
Yeah,
the slow land. That come into play untapped. Well, the exact wording is they enter the battlefield tapped unless you control two or more basic lands, which is, to me, is awesome just because I've been too used to playing all these temples. So, and Sandstep Citadels, where I'm basically playing decks that always have lands tap in their early turns anyways, and then, like, later on in the game where I want to hit my fifth land untapped or sixth land untapped to be able to cast that Elspeth right away, these lands allow you to do that. Basically, they're just dual lands that come into play untapped past turns three. Like, once you have two or more lands, they come into play untapped, which is really exciting. I think they're, like, the exact land I want to draw a lot of the time in a lot of the matches.
Now, to be fair, it is basic land. It's not land. It's basic land.
Oh, shit. You're right. Yeah. I missed that part. I actually did miss it. So it's not exactly, like, reverse Seacrum Coast.
No, it's close. And, I mean, like, I think... I'm not sure if that's a balance thing. Like, is that too powerful? If it was, like... comes into play tapped unless you just control two lands.
I mean, I guess it felt, maybe, because it's just like from that point on, like, it's maybe it's never been like that in standard Magic for a while, where you can just play an untapped dual land with, like, no drawback. So maybe,
yeah.
Like, usually it's like you have to take a damage or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, I think that's probably why they did it, and then, like. But at the same time, like, if you just took out the basic thing, then it's, like, I guess, like, you still have a drawback, right? Because the Scars lands didn't say basic, right? They said land, so...
Right.
Although they were fast, and these are slow, so then maybe that's what it was. But, I mean, I think they're interesting. I like the fact that they are actual basic land types, so I think it's really cool that you can fetch them. I think that's really sweet, especially with especially with the cons. Especially with the cons, like fetch lands, and I'm assuming they're going to reprint them, at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming they're going to reprint the old Zendikar ones, the new fetches at some point.
But eventually.
Yeah. So I think it's cool that they have those. I think that obviously opens them up to being pretty powerful. Already, like, anytime you have a dual land that has, you know, the basic land type, that becomes pretty powerful. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, but during Ravnica, did we not have fetches and shocklands in the same format? No, that must have been way too far apart.
I don't remember. That would be Onslaught and Ravnica, and I'm not sure they were close at all.
And then when they did Return to Ravnica, there wasn't Shocks and Cons fetches, right? Those are also too far apart?
I would think so.
Yeah, okay.
Off the top of my head. Listeners can correct
us. So you're right. So, like, in standard, generally, they don't want to give you mana like that.
Yeah, this is pretty sweet. A lot of the time, like, when I want to play Siege Rhino, I'm just, like, ripping, like, a temple or...
Yeah, and that sucks.
Right, or a Sandstep Citadel. Like, a lot of your big hits... Like, you're very fine. You're very happy to play a tap land on turn one, and then you go turn two, Fleece Mane Lion, and then it's like, you know, turn three and four, you really want to hit that Anafenza on turn three or the Siege Rhino on four. So, you reminded me this requires two basics, so I'm not exactly sure how it plays out, but the fact that these are fetchable, because of their basic land types. You know, I'm really happy to see them. I'm really excited to play with them. And I remember when Scrylands were first printed, a lot of people, there were a lot of haters. Like, that's it? They just scry one?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm, you know, to be honest, I don't know if I was one of those people, but I'm sure that it sounds like something that I would have said.
Right. And they were awesome. So looking forward to that very much. But all this, like, battle for Zendikar news basically overshadowed, I felt, the World Championships that were happening once the foil premium stuff came out. Like, even Reddit, like, the top, let's say, first page was all Zendikar shit. And then, I don't know if this is good, but basically the last item on that page was like, oh, congratulations to Seth Manfield for being the world champion. So completely overshadowed their most prestigious tournament.
To be fair, I didn't even know that it was Worlds. Like, no one was talking about it, right?
Right.
And that's how I get my Magic news. People talking about it. I don't follow, like, you know, I don't look at the schedule or whatever. And I don't play the event, so...
I did watch some of it. I couldn't watch a lot of it because I was playing at the MDSS that we were hosting in Quebec City, the record-breaking one talking about earlier.
Sweet one.
But I did watch a bit of it. I mean, it was Jackie Lee's debut. There's a lot of talk about it because it's the first female commentator that they had. Funny, they never got Melissa to try. Maybe she did try out at some point. I'm not sure if she's done GPs or not. But Jackie Lee, this big, huge event, her debut at fucking Worlds. And I think a lot of people felt like she didn't, you know, I've only heard bad reviews from people. I thought she was fine for her first shot. I mean, she has to get into the flow. I mean, LSV and Marshall, they podcast together. They're obviously used to talking with each other. It's like me and you right now, if you had like a third guy that just debuted for the first time, it's not going to be amazing from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. And
I thought she was fine. I liked the potential. And, you know, I actually like seeing, I mean, I don't know if it makes me, if it's weird for me to say that I like just seeing a girl. I like the contrast on visually even and voice wise. It was pretty sweet. And I think there were a lot less talk just because the top four ended up, your boy Owen was in the finals, actually.
Yeah.
He lost a heartbreaker to Seth Manfield. But him, Owen, Rietzel, Manfield, Rietzel, and Owen all played Abzan. Seth Rietzel was on Abzan aggro, and Sam Black played his mono white brew. But a lot of casuals were turned off by the fact that it was just like an Abzan fest.
Yeah.
But to me, it was a great, great coverage. I enjoyed the high level of Magic. I intend to watch it from beginning to end just because it's probably the tournament to watch if you want to learn something in terms of their play. Like, oh, this guy would do this. Instead of like watching a GP where a guy might just be doing the wrong plays and you're learning the wrong thing, this, you're playing against, you know, the top 24 players in the world, and they'll probably know what they're doing, so there's something to be learned from that. So I'm excited to go back and watch that footage. But yeah, it's overshadowed, and I think there were jokes made, Jay, where sometimes the camera would pan to like the audience, and there was just a lot of empty seats.
Oh, really?
Because it was really awkward, and they would pan back to Rich Hagon, and I think the fact is that, I don't know if you've heard it, is because before they used to have it in the same weekend, I think, as the Magic World Cup. And now it's just like 24 people. I think it's 24, not 32, right? I think it's 24 that fly to Seattle. And they're not flying with like their usual teammates or other people. Like, there's no other tournament going on. It's just people that are going there for PAX Prime.
Right.
So you don't have as big of an audience that are watching Magic Worlds as you would. And I think even when Seth won, like, the applause from the crowd was like very mediocre, as opposed to a pro tour when you have like a larger team going completely nuts for the guy who won. So, but Seth, like he cried when he won, and definitely captured the emotion of the win. And I'm very happy for him, as a lot of my friends think he's a cool dude. So that was pretty cool. And recommend our listeners again to watch the coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing too is that, like, so you mentioned that there was like these awkward, like, pannings and these awkward, like, just like seats that are empty and stuff like that. The thing with that is, so, like, is twofold. One is, like, whoever's operating the camera, you don't pan to a fucking empty gallery. Hello? So whoever's telling you to do that is an idiot, or you're an idiot if you were doing that on your own. You don't, like, and the crowd goes wild, and it's just like KYT, like, yay! I'm having fun! Like, no. You, like, you know, and then, like, and, like, the other thing is, so this happened at the International for Dota. So that was the $18 million prize pool, Super Bowl of video games. So what happened is, like, there was a lot of threads going up on Reddit, which is just a fucking shithole. Fuck that fucking site. But going up on Reddit about how, like, when they are watching coverage, you know, or they're panning through coverage, like, it looks like it's empty and people, you know, and then they were saying all these negative things, like, oh, you know, like, they're hyping it, but obviously, like, fucking no one cares, or, like, you know what I mean, like, whatever. And so, like, then what ended up happening is people that were actually there ended up setting the record straight and saying, like, actually, you know, the place is packed, here's some photos of during the game. When there wasn't a game going on, it wasn't packed, obviously. But when, like, the games were happening and stuff, it was fucking packed. And then it was just like a hockey game. In between periods, you don't pan the crowd to show a full house because everyone's getting beer and taking a piss. Like, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. So, like, I mean, it's possible that was happening. It doesn't sound like that is the case. But I just wanted to make sure, like, that I mentioned that. It's just, like, it's a lot of that stuff can be kind of weird, too, where you're like, well, this is, like, world. Why aren't people hyped for this, you know?
Right, right. And I think, like, yeah, if they want to do it in this form, or it's just, like, this singular event that, like, 24 people across the world travel to, I mean, where your teammates are not, your usual team's not going with you, you're going to have that type of effect. So that's what happened. Like you reminded me of how certain wrestling federations are not as popular as WWE. They have to, like, I've heard of this, where they have to, like, close down specific sections of the arena so that, like, when the limited people that they do have show up, they make it feel like it's a full house.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're only showing you, like, the left side, but it's, like, you know, it's a full house, but they're only showing you, like, the two sides of the ring or whatever.
Right, right. But if you're watching it on TV or whatever, you're like, holy shit, that hypes you about the event. You're like, oh man, this event must be insane. So that was some of the funny shots. And for the first time in a while, I know the Twitch chat is very trolly, and I shouldn't be laughing at some of the things, but when Sean McLaren was on, I laughed a bit because people were definitely making fun of the way he was trying to say, like, I mess up card names all the time, but Dragon Lord Ojitai, he likes to say Ujitai, and,
oh,
and people
yeah.
were just going crazy.
Yeah.
And saying stuff like, one guy said, oh, Dragon Lord Abujitai. I just lost it. And for me, like I said, I was playing at the MDSS a bit. I'm always conflicted to play or not, because I feel it's kind of weird if I do win a Manager Prize Super Series. So that's always at the back of my mind. From now on, I should just decide not to play them, so I don't have that question lingering in my head as I'm playing.
Or just also play them. Like, I mean, it is something that comes up a lot. Like, people will say, like, you'll go to, like, a Phoenix, say, like, pre-release or a game day, right? And then there's, like, a Phoenix employee playing in it, and it's, like, people always say, like, oh, whatever, like, you're playing in your own tournament or whatever, and it's, like, yeah, like, but, I mean, at the same time, it's just mad. It's not like they get an advantage or something. I don't know.
Right.
It does kind of suck if, like, I guess I could kind of see that it would kind of suck if, like, face-to-face employee won all the face-to-face events, like, yeah.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. I think I would cross that bridge when I got there. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right. For me, it's extra weird just because, well, I know it's not weird for people in the know because they know face-to-face games. Like, MDSS is just like a name. Like, face-to-face games is a true brand behind the actual tournament. But for people who associate me with Mana Deprived, the brand itself, and they should, I guess, for me to win that, like, it is kind of weird. I can see that being really weird to a good percentage of people. Yeah.
But I mean, like, you know, like, Star City Games employees and, like,
right,
they play in the Super Series or, you know, or whatever, right? Like,
but Pete Hoffling doesn't play them, right? So
I guess so, yeah.
So I did play. In fact, I went 3-3. I lost the round that eliminated me from top 8 contention to the eventual winner in an Infect Mirror. I didn't have any decks prepared, so I just asked my good friend William Blonde, and he passed me, I guess, someone recent list of a blue-green Infect that pretty stock list right now that Tom Ross and company popularized at the Pro Tour in Washington. The mirror is kind of funny because what ends up happening is that you both side in like Spellskites and a bunch of Nature's Claim to kill each other's Spellskites. It's a key card because it stops the opponent's pump spells, but you can't really interact with each other's Blighted Agents or Inkmoth Nexus that well. Like, if someone has a Blinkmoth Nexus, well, how I end up losing in the mirror is the fact that he had a Blinkmoth Nexus and like a Pendlehaven and 3 Noble Hierarchs. So when he attacks, he's attacking me for 5 Infect. And like, Spellskite doesn't stop that. Spellskite is there to stop their Become Immense, Might of Old Cruel, all the pump spells. But Noble Hierarchs, having 3, is basically a pump spell every turn that gets around Spellskite. So him having that draw and me not having something like, I mean, I didn't have it in this particular list that William brought me, but I would have needed like the random Piracy Charm or some sort of weird removal that in fact decks normally don't play, do not play. So it was kind of weird. I lost to that. I lost to Delver, Grixis Delver, where, you know, I couldn't draw a key pump spell near the end of game 3, where he would tap out for consecutive turns, and all I had to do was hit one of my pump spells to win the game. So it was very close. Though Delver is theoretically a bad matchup because of all their burn and their quick clock. And then I lost to Storm because I mulled a 4. But every other game, it felt pretty good to just be able to kill people pretty fast. And I still think Infect might be a good choice moving forward for listeners, because it seems like Mono Red, despite being a big player in the online metagame, has completely disappeared in real life, it seems.
Really?
Because it has some bad matchups. Like, people think it's bad against Splinter Twin because you have Deceiver Exarch. They have Deceiver Exarch and they can just combo you before you get burned out.
Right.
Amulet Bloom seems to be a faster combo kill as displayed at the PT against Mono Red. And even Grixis Delver can race it, apparently. So you've got all these. They can normally can't really race it because Grixis Delver takes a lot of pain from their lands to cast Delvers, Young Pyromancers, etc. But because they now adopted dispels, it's allowed them to be able to have more of a game against Mono Red, is what I'm hearing. And they're able to the addition of dispels able to allow them to beat those random combo decks like Goryeo's Vengeance, etc. So that's how the modern metagame is shaping up. But the most popular deck for sure at Quebec City was Merfolk by a significant margin. I didn't end up winning the tournament. It didn't end up making the finals. The finals was, in fact, against Green Red Tron. It's still a very diverse metagame, and I think that it'll be interesting to see what I decide to play at the WMCQ this coming weekend in Toronto. I'm leaning towards Affinity just because it seems like I should have been playing this deck from the beginning, because no matter what happens, no matter how much hate, it still produces numbers. And I think in the grand scheme of things, it's always a decent deck, especially now with, like, well, Modern has always been like that, with people just playing their pet decks. Affinity always has game, and I should have been tuning it the whole time. The innovation from Worlds was the Aether Grid card from Origins. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, Jay. It's where you like tap the red enchantment. If you tap 2 artifacts, you get to deal 1 damage.
No.
So it gets around a lot of like Stony Silence. It gets around that and allows you to have game in the mirror against token decks. But like a lot of these matches aren't even Affinity's worst matchup. Splinter Twin is considered the worst matchup for Affinity because they can just kill you before you kill them.
Right,
so
okay.
I'm not sure how... It's not going to significantly help its overall win percentage, but it's going to help push it forward in the close matchup. So
that's
my wrap-up for my MDSS. Really excited. 119 players. We're going to St. John's this weekend, home of Chris Lansdale. He's going to be head judging the event this weekend. Hopefully we see another significant boost. Maybe we have to make all the MDSS modern to get the most people as possible. I don't know how. A lot of people don't like this format. Like you and Phil Sams have been vocal. What's the opposite of proponents?
Like detractors?
Detractors of the format. So it's interesting. We are coming to Calgary in October 17th. But when we announced it, when we announced the MDSS, we got a message from, I guess, a player through the Man of the Prize Super Series Facebook page. I got it. That warned me that on the same date, sadly, there's a 1K at Phoenix Comics.
Yeah, that sucks.
A PPTQ. Yeah. I think PD Pablo looked at the Facebook page for that event, and I think they're hosting it, and they have like max seating for that PPTQ. Yeah. So maybe the conflict won't be as bad. We actually tried our hardest, or Calgary listeners will know that we actually called the venue and tried different ways to move our event to Sunday. As far as I've been told, we've done everything. We just can't move it. Oh, it's not feasible. So we're going to host it the same day. So if you guys want to play at the MDSS Calgary, it's not a pre-TQ, but it's a bigger prize pool, then hopefully you guys will make it down there. Because we're making a serious push, not this year, but next year, to get that crazy potential invite, PTQ invite, not PTQ, Pro Tour invite as part of our tournament system. And that requires certain conditions. We're obviously far from that because like they basically did it so that SCG could get one, so that they, you know, they've been hosting all these open series.
Yeah.
They've been so that the Wizards basically threw them a bone.
Yeah, it makes
them
a little bit more legit.
Right. But they also had to make it like a rule where it's open to other tournament series, right? So it doesn't look like
nepotism.
Right. And so I think that if we do good enough, if we keep doing pushing these numbers, then we could get there. So I'm pretty excited about that, and pretty excited about 2016 as we plan. But we're really busy planning the GP as well in Toronto. So we've got a lot of on our plates, and as the guy responsible for marketing a lot of this stuff, you know, it's really exciting, but it's also going to be a lot of fucking work. I hear you got a letter for us.
Yeah, so an anonymous source, kind of like me, has just been... he's just been kind of... keeping a little, I guess what I want to say is, like, it's not like a journal, but it's basically, like, I guess it's kind of like a journal, but you know how they say, like, when you have a problem with someone or you really don't like someone, instead of, like, telling them off or doing whatever, you should, like, write a letter. And then instead of sending that letter, you should, like, put that letter in a drawer in your desk and see how you feel about it in a day or two. Because often what will happen is just writing those feelings down is very cathartic. And it will get out the rage that you need to get out, but then, you know, you're never...
I agree with that.
You're never hurting someone's feelings, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Sure, yeah. So this guy has one of these, and he mentioned it to me, and I've actually been supposed to... I wanted to read it a couple times online, but I'm just a fucking idiot, and I forget all the time when we're doing the show. So I wanted to, and you know, it's funny because in the last couple of weeks, something has always come up where this letter is like perfect. So, you know, recently it was about modern, you know, prices, and then it was about Battle for Zendikar stuff, and then it was about world stuff, and then it was, you know, before that it was about some other shit that I don't care about, can't remember. You know what I mean? Like, so it just keeps coming back and back. So he sent it to me and said, you know, he would love it if I read it on the show. Now, again, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Everyone's allowed to have their opinion. So, you know, I mean, I personally think this is a great one to have. But, yeah, so I'll just read it without further ado. Hi there. It seems that you've been directed here by a concerned member of your fandom, family, internet person to help you with your recent outburst / internet post / reel or social media tantrum. Fear not. We are here to help you address your needs with a handy algorithm for which will hopefully provide some insight into not only the strife, heartache, betrayal that you've been experiencing, but also provide some useful context to aid you in the future. For example, problem one. I've played Game X for Y length of time. And someone who has played Game X for less than Y length of time is getting a benefit that I am not getting. What's the solution to this problem? Shut the fuck up. Sometimes in the business world, people provide incentives for new players to join their game, expand their community, and increase the overall net worth of their intellectual property. It introduces new capital to the system, which often improves the infrastructure, well-being of the sports staff, and provides a larger player base for you to interact with, thus improving your overall experience as well. Problem number two. I'm playing X game, and the experience is not what I would like it to be. No matter how much time or money or fandom I personally invest in this game, they're not listening, and it is not improving. So what's the solution to that problem, you say? It's also shut the fuck up. Intelligence is in part defined by our use of logic. Insanity is occasionally defined as repeating the same action over and over again, but expecting a different result. If you are investing your time and energy and money into something you are dissatisfied with, and it's not changing, then try this very quick self-exam. Who is the boss of me? It's important to assess who the boss of you is. If you are not the boss of you, then continue to pour your time and energy and money into Game X. Spoiler alert, consistency is consistent, and logic is your friend. Bonus! Because many people don't seem to process this. You know what does work? Stop investing your time and energy and money. Investors pay attention to that. Yes, they do. Shut up. Problem three. Regarding Game X fandom topic of the day. This is not fair. So modern costs too much, or these prices of fetch lands are, you know, keeping me from playing modern or whatever. Solution. Shut the fuck up. While you are shutting the fuck up, take a minute to educate yourself in business, economic, and social dynamics. Take a minute to examine how your view on topic of interest is not fair. Is someone dying a long, painful death of starvation unfair? Is a terrible, unexpected injury unfair? Is this issue in the realm of entertainment, hobby, / luxury unfair? Just shut the fuck up. Problem number four. I have a strong opinion on matters XYZ, and I feel that by posing it in a quirky and cutting 140-character manner, I will not only convince people to share my profound message, but also demonstrate that I am an informed and educated person on this matter. Solution. Shut the fuck up. No, you're not. Posting a knee-jerk, ill-informed image or comment is annoying when it's done the first time. When you retweet, repost, redistribute Facebook-like G-plus bullshit, the content, it not only demonstrates that you value your own time so poorly that you can't put a concerted effort into posting your own insightful take, but that you also respect other people's time so little that you feel they deserve to spend their time on this too. Also, we all know you're doing it for views, retweets, and internet points. You're not doing it because you agree, so shut the fuck up. Problem number five. Literally anything to do to the tune of smug value. Shut the fuck up. Value can be measured in many ways. Time, energy, return on investment. Something is as valuable as what you are actually willing to do for it. If something is poor value, but you are still willing to invest your time, energy, and money into it, then it's great value for the person offering it. Want to know how to devalue something? Stop giving it your time, energy, and money. Also, get off your high horse about how much better value you got out of something than someone else got. You are a special snowflake. Something that is of value to you is something you experience uniquely. Problem six. I invested my time and money into something numerically limited game element or component, and I will reap the rewards of it later. Shut the fuck up. It's a limited game component that people may need to play. If you're taking away from the game and you're not giving back, you're a parasite, you're hurting the game. You should fucking die. Problem number seven. You're being mean. Sorry, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm trying to help you cope with big, scary internet world by introducing you to some non-internet jargon and thinking. Also, shut the fuck up. This has been a free, helpful guide for you. And, you know, I personally think that it's great and more people should follow it. Absolutely. I'm sure now some motherfucker is going to put in the comment, hey, Jay, shut the fuck up, and it'll be hilarious. But that comes back to point, I think it was 4, where you're just retweeting that to get popular. Shut the fuck up. Also, wow. That was like, there was the whole, what was the other problem? There was the whole, like, fucking MTG Finance fucking scandal, and there was, oh, man. So, you know? I just, shut the fuck up is all I want to hear about, you know? So, yeah. That is our fan letter. I'm sorry that it wasn't a shit story, but I have to save those for celebrity crap chat.
Yeah, yeah, we gotta save that shit for you.
Yeah, I can't give you guys, you know, all of my great material. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I wanted to also. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, so if I did, I apologize. I don't think I did, but I can't figure it out. But I just wanted to give a big shout out to James, I believe his name was. And I really just hope that everything goes right in your magic career. So James was a Canadian who now lives, I believe, according to his Twitter profile, in Texas. He's been, what did he call, uprooted. And I don't know if all these children were his or if they were just friends of his kids or uncle or whatever, but I was in Phoenix a little while ago and I was just looking at some singles, talking with the guys, and James was in there with like a gaggle of kids. And he asked if they sold playmats. And Phoenix does sell playmats, but at the time they were sold out. He's like, I'm sorry, we're sold out. And he's like, oh, do you know anywhere else that we can get them? And they, you know, Phoenix being the great business that they are, definitely just, you know, told them other stores that have them. They didn't, you know, keep that for themselves. And unfortunately for James, because he's from out of town, he wasn't going to be able to really, he didn't really want to run around. They did offer to order him some. He said, well, you know, I'm only in town today, so I can't really wait for them to come in. Bummer. You know, I got dice and cards and sleeves for these guys, these 5 or 6 kids that were trying to teach magic and stuff. I think one of them, at least one of them, is his son. And he wants to just get them playmats because that's how you finalize your accessory, right? And so I'm moving. Everybody knows I'm moving. And I had just, like, that day finished packing up my basement. And I had just gotten, like, packed up a bunch of my old playmats and stuff. And so overhearing this, I don't know, I was just overcome with this feeling that I should just give back a little bit. So I just kind of interrupted and said, like, hey, you know, if you want, I have some playmats at home. I don't really need them anymore. I don't need 10 playmats. I'm a one person. I don't even really use them anymore. I used to use them all the time, but I don't. So if you want, I will absolutely give them to you free of charge. It's not a big deal. And he was pretty surprised and, I mean, of course, accepted, which is totally what I wanted him to do anyway. And I ended up running home from Phoenix, running back to the store. I ended up bringing like a suitcase full of dice for this little gaffer who was, oh man, he had, can't have been more than 7, I am going to say. He was just tiny. Ooh. And he was like, you know, Dad, I want some dice. He picked up some dice. And there was this whole little thing about, you know, he wanted this dice for some reason. So I didn't need a suitcase full of dice. So I brought that back. I gave all these kids a playmat and then just 10,000 pounds of dice for this little kid. Like, he couldn't even lift the thing. And, you know, James did the right thing, and, you know, he was super grateful. His kids were super grateful. He told me their story about how one of them wanted to learn magic, and then a bunch of them kind of followed suit, and he's teaching them, and he plays magic. And, you know, according to his Twitter profile, it sounds like he's just not able to be home all the time. And, like I said, like, this is kind of the whole thing I was talking about earlier with the lands, where if you can help people out and get them into magic, you know, people that are in magic deep, we get kind of salty sometimes. And I don't think it's not always for the right reasons, but it's certainly a lot of times there are like a justified reason for that. But you know what? These kids just wanted to play magic with their dad. And, like, that breaks my heart. That's, like, the greatest fucking thing on the whole planet. I want these kids to play Magic with their dad, right? So, so I think, you know, I think that's just, that's where I'm at with the community. That's where I want to be. And I think, I've said that before, and I'm really trying hard not to, like, toot my own horn. It's not so much, like, look at me and how great I am. It's more so about just, like, lead by example. You know, I love hearing about people that have, like, a magic club in their school, and they start out, you know, there was only four of us, and then some of the cool kids showed up that we thought would make fun of us, but they wanted to play, and then, you know, the band teacher, Mr. Rogers or whatever, like, he would help us and teach us, and then, oh, I went to my first GP, and it was so fun, and, you know, I went 08, but it was the greatest time, and, you know, that's the stuff that I want to hear about, you know. So I just wanted to give a big shout out to James and his family and his kids. And I hope that you guys get a lot of use out of those play mats. It's way better than them just sitting in a box at my house, not doing anything. So.
That's really nice of you, Jay.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a little while ago I went to a school and did...
Oh, yes!
And, like, face-to-face definitely just shipped us. Like, they... I remember I was talking to Petey Pablo, and I just told him the story. I just said, hey, man, I met this guy at GP Calgary. He's the teacher of his magic club. He's just trying to, you know, have something to do, but it's in a small town where there's no magic store. So, you know, the kids don't get to draft very often because they got to drive all the way into, you know, the Sentry Box to buy a box of magic cards. And, like, what's the retail on a box of magic cards? $100, $110. So, you know, kids don't have that kind of pocket money, and they're from a small town and whatever, you know? And so I told, you know, I said, you know, I didn't talk to this guy at all about what I was going to do. I just, again, I was kind of hit with inspiration. And I said to Peter, I said, it like, you know, is there anything that face-to-face wants to do? If not, it's totally okay. I'm not going to shit-talk you. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not going to, you know, trash you for not wanting to be involved in this. And Peter said, let me see if I can do anything. And within a couple of days, I received, like, a huge package. He didn't even tell me he was sending it. And I just received a huge package full of starter decks, boxes of cards, dice, playmats, deck boxes, like, just everything. And those kids just went nuts. They just went nuts for that. They had never experienced anything like that before in their life. And, like, think back to a time when that happened to you. And you know, if that didn't happen to you and you're really upset about that, like, that sucks. But, you know, it's on you then even more to perpetuate that and go forward and make it better. You know, you always hear the cliche of, like, I never want to be the dad that my dad was. I want to, you know, be better or whatever, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's on you. Right. If no one ever helped you out and people scammed you for magic cards and people cheated and beat you all the time, I mean, you can be mad about that. That's totally fine. But the way that you solve that problem is not by taking that out on the newer generation and saying, like, well, that happened to me. They've got to learn somehow. It's by helping them and by being the better person. So shut the fuck up, everybody.
Yeah, shut your goddamn complaint.
Shut the fuck up.
Kyle, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're just about out of time, so I am disappointed you're not saying my favorite, my name dropping some of my favorite names in the Magic universe, though.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the Jeremy KYT Dynamic Duo show had some.
I mean,
and like I said, I didn't watch Worlds. Because nobody cared about that. They cared about PAX and the Eldrazi statues outside and the spoilers. I don't even know if who was there. Like, okay, Owen was in the finals. Seth Manfield won. Right?
Right.
Who, like, what position did Namsung Wook get?
He wasn't invited.
He wasn't even invited, that guy. Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, but he's no longer my favorite guy.
No?
I'm talking about guys like Yves McRae.
Oh, shit. Yves McRae. So, okay. So, this is the other thing. I don't know if Yves McRae has talked to you, Mr. McRae. I don't know if he's talked to you about this, but he has definitely talked to me about this. So, when I was in GP Portland having the greatest magic experience of my life with the mostly the heavy meta SVU, but also Mr. McRae, we had a conversation about, do great magic events happen because of GPs and stuff like that? Because they're like a mecca, everybody goes to them? Or are we capable of having one without it? Because most of us didn't play the format, we didn't really care about the team sealed. Like, that's a cool event, but we weren't there for the event. And the weekend wasn't great because of a great GP. It was great because we were partying and playing Magic with each other, and there was a cube house, and then we played Werewolf, and then we drove and had great food, and then we, you know, and we couldn't really settle. Half the guys said, yeah, like, you need to have it at a GP. Like, if you're going to have an event, you need to have it at a GP or something so that you get all of the, like, the outsider guys that wouldn't normally, like, that you don't really know good enough that they would, or, like, also, they, you know, I can't justify just going to Florida to hang out with some bros to play Mad. But you know what? I could probably justify / convince my wife to go / come with me, let me go or come with me, to, like, GP Florida and roll that into a vacation. Like, if I give a reason, if I say, hey, I want to go to Toronto because it's GP Toronto and Scotty and KYT are going to be there, but also you love Alana and, you know, we could meet KYT's mythical Asian girlfriend and, you know, we could have a, it doesn't have to be a Magic vacation. You could come and have a great, and we roll it into a thing. You know, that's a little bit easier for a lot of people than just like, hey, you want to go to Toronto next weekend and spend three grand to see Scotty? Like, I would love to do that. We just can't afford it. But if it's a planned GP with a schedule, you know, so Eve is trying to do a Canadian version of that.
You have to say his whole name all the time.
Eve McRae is trying to do a Canadian version of that. And he's thinking somewhere in the Rocky Mountains, like Banff, Jasper, Radium Hot Springs, something like that, which I realize kind of sucks for, like, say, the East Coasters. But I think it would be great, like, go to a hotel and have a hotel room, and, like, it's just, like, a thing that you do. Like, oh, are you guys playing Cube? Cool. We're going to head down to the hot tub and get a, you know, sit in the hot springs outside in the mountains, and then we'll come back in and maybe we could have like an EDH tournament if people want to, and oh, those guys over there are gonna draft the latest set, and oh, somebody brought, you know, somebody brought fucking Weatherlight packs to do a Weatherlight draft, cool, and like just shit like that. Oh, and then at night we'll all go for dinner and play Werewolf, and oh, it'll be great. And I think it's a super great idea. I think stuff like that is like, it's basically like a bachelor party without having somebody get married to have, like, as a reason to do that. You know?
Right, right. So I'm not sure where I stand on that. I think that the allure of the GP is that you will attract certain people that you still want to see that aren't, like, exactly... Like, I'm probably a big example of that. Like, when I went to Vegas, I didn't exactly... I wasn't at the SVU house for, like, most of the time.
Yeah.
But I'm someone that, let's say, TSU really wanted to cube with. And, like, I'm there. And we did manage to ring off, like, multiple cube drafts. And, like, you know, he was really happy. I was really happy to cube with him. And so you attract guys like me who wouldn't normally go out of his way to go to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a tough. And, like, you're more likely... People are more incentivized to go if it's attached to GP, because then there's like other random people that they didn't think of that might show up that they think they might enjoy spending time with. So there's that attached to it. So, but him suggesting a cool location like Banff is just like, they're never going to have like a GP there. So it's like,
yeah.
So it's stuff
and like
that.
The thing is, like, if you go to GP Calgary or GP Vancouver, which are probably going to be the closest ones to Banff, you're never going to, like, you're never going to leave Calgary to go to Banff. Like, it's an hour and a half away, right?
Right, right.
So, like, maybe you would, if you were here at Calgary and trying to do the vacation role in one kind of thing, right? But, other than that, you're never going to go. And if you are going to go, it's not going to be with a bunch of dudes. Like, they're all going to be going home and stuff. And that's the other thing that kind of sucks about the GPs is, like, you know, you have people leaving and going home at random times and people playing in the main event and then they want to go to the turn. And, like, the thing, like I said, and that was great about Portland is, like, nobody had to do anything with anyone. We had two houses off Airbnb. You woke up, if people were around, it was like, hey, man, what do you want to do? Like, oh, I was going to go down to the tournament site and get some stuff signed by artists. Oh, shit, let's do it. And then you're down there and you bump into someone and you're like, hey, what's going on? And you're like, what are you doing later? Oh, nothing. Why don't you come by the house, man? We're going to play cube and barbecue and shit. And there was like, times when there was like 50 people there. Like, I met some great people in Portland by doing that. Eve brought some really great people. That's how I met.
Whoa, you did it again.
You know? Oh, sorry. Eve McRae, you know, brought some great people. I met Dreamtime Drin, Adrian.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I met, I basically met Jess. Like, I'm pretty sure that's the first time I'd met Bloody Mess Jess sober. Because obviously I met her at my bachelor party, and if you want to hear that story, you can listen to the episode of the 8th. You know, and
like, you know what it sounded like? It sounded like you're saying the first time you saw her sober.
No, me sober. You know, and like there was some, to be honest, I can't remember their names, but there was like this group of people that I just remember vividly. One of them was like a very tiny little pixie like, fairy like, nymph like lady, and she was great. I'm not being derogatory. That's just the best way that I can put an image in your head. She was great. Her friends were awesome. I got to hang out with Marcel and Maddie and Kevy and Slick, and like it was just, and Tommy, like it was just fucking insane, right? Like just people, and like I met now I've gone blank, but I, you know, it was just insane, and like that was what made it great. I didn't even play in the main event of GP Portland. I think I played maybe one event at GP Portland, and that was just because I was there and felt like it was such a waste to be there and not play an event.
Wasn't it a two-headed giant with Yves McRae?
It was a two-headed giant with Yves McRae. Yeah.
So, extra shouts to another name that I wanted you to say, but you didn't. At least I don't think you did. Shout out to Hugh Sutherland. Is that the actual name? Or Sue Sutherland? I forget. It was Hugh Sutherland, right?
I don't know. The high school? I don't even know who you're... Oh, yeah! Yes, it was! Hugh Sutherland. Yep.
All right. Goodbye, guys.